Okay. Good morning, everybody. We'll start. Good morning. Okay. We started to speak about Chumash Bamidbar last time, and I want to give another aspect of what the Chumash as a whole shows us now. Okay. So we called it the 10 tests of Dor HaMidbar, 10 tests of every human being. Right? So let's look at it from this perspective. As we did in the past, we paid attention to the names of the Chumashim, and we said the name is a definition. And there are two names to Chumash Bamidbar that we discussed already in one way, and I want to discuss today in a different way. It's Chumash Bamidbar, of course, in the desert, right? That's how it starts. And the other one is Chumash HaPkudim, the book of those who were counted. Okay, so we'll come to it a little later, but this will be, you know, defining for us the Sefer in another way as well, in addition to what we did in the past. So I want to put Bamidbar in the context of the five Chumashim. So we said Chumash Bereshit is the book of creation, physical creation, what Perek Aleph is all about, and then the creation of the nucleus of the DNA of the Jewish people via the Avot, the Shvatim, the Imahot. Ending with 70 people going down, of the family of Yaakov, going down to Mitzrayim. The next Sefer, Chumash Shmot, discusses the tree, so to speak, that grew from the root, the creation of the Jewish nation. That's the theme of Chumash Shmot. Chumash Vayikra, as we know, are laws, mitzvot. The whole Chumash is a Chumash of mitzvot. We have maybe one or two stories there, but basically it's a Chumash of mitzvot. Meaning it's a Chumash that gives us Torah, gives us mitzvot, right? The last Chumash, and I'm skipping Bamidbar intentionally, Chumash Dvarim is a Chumash that prepares Klal Yisrael for entering Eretz Yisrael. The ultimate place for Klal Yisrael is Eretz Yisrael, when Hashem told Moshe, go redeem Klal Yisrael for the first time, right, when he spoke to him, he told him that I'm going to bring them into Eretz Tchita, Seorah, and so on, right, to Eretz Tova. So this is the ultimate goal, and Chumash Dvarim concentrates on mitzvot and messages that Klal Yisrael need as preparation to enter Eretz Yisrael. Chumash Bamidbar is in between. Between Vayikra, which is Torah, and between Dvarim, which is preparation for Eretz Yisrael. What is Chumash Bamidbar all about? Okay, so we'll keep this question open. And I want to go to a chazal on the name Bamidbar. The first pasuk in Chumash Bamidbar tells us that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Torah gives us the location. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, במדבר סיני, באוהל מועד, באחד לחודש השני, בשנה השנית לצאתה מארץ מצרים. השם spoke to Moshe in the desert of Sinai, באוהל מועד, במשכן, באחד לחודש השני, יש the date, right? That's when Hashem spoke to Moshe. And commentary says, why do we have to be told that they are in Midbar Sinai? We know it from what's written before. It's not written in the Torah that they moved away from there, right? So what's the point of writing it? It's extra altogether. And interesting, superficially, of course. And it became the name of the Sefer, Bamidbar. So what is it all about? So I want to read. Okay. Chazal. Okay, וידבר השם אל משה במדבר סיני. Okay, it's מדרש רבה on the parsha. כל מי שאינו עושה עצמו כמדבר הפקר, whoever does not make himself like a desert that is no man's land, אינו יכול לקנות את החוכמה והתורה. Cannot acquire the wisdom of Torah. Right? That's why it's written במדבר סיני. Okay, so the Torah wants to tell us, if you want to acquire Torah, then you have to make yourself like a midbar. Now, what's written after doesn't seem like mitzvot of Torah. It's a story, right? It's the counting of Klal Yisrael. So what's the connection between Bemidbar Sinai and what Chazal say? It seems more maybe suitable to be said at the beginning of Vayikra or at the beginning of Dvarim than all the mitzvot of the Torah are written. Why is it written here, right? And why is it in the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar? Okay. So the Sfat Emet explains it in a very, very beautiful way. And he says the following. He says, Midbar is Leshon Dibur ve'anhaga. The word Midbar is desert. But if we look at the root of the word Midbar, Dalet Betresh, it has more meanings. One is ledaber, to speak, and the other one is to lead. We have a statement, davar echad lador ve'lo shnei davarim lador, what means one leader to a generation, not two, right? So we see that this word is used also for leadership. Okay? So midbar, the root of midbar, dalet bet resh, can be also explained, right? The word midbar can be explained also based on the other two meanings of the root, right? So the Sfat Emet says, Leshon Dibur ve'anhaga. And he compares it to Aseret HaDibrot. We have the same root in the name of the Ten Commandments, Aseret HaDibrot, right? And why is it called Aseret HaDibrot, right? Why not, let's say, Aseret HaMa'amarot, like the 10 sayings that Hashem created the world with? Why to change? Here it was 10 things Hashem said, and here it was 10 things Hashem said. Why do Chazal use a different root to describe the fact that it was said by Hashem? Says the Sfat Emet, what is Aseret HaDivrot? Liyot nidbar hakol al pi mitzvat Hashem yitbarach. Aseret HaDivrot are 10 sayings of Hashem that help us to be led, to lead our life based on what Hashem tells us to do. That's basically why it's called Aseret HaDivrot. It's not just 10 commandments, right? It's 10 sayings of Hashem that lead us in being what Hashem wants us to be. So the same way with Midbar. Midbar comes also from Anaga, okay? And he explains. He says, Ken ha'adam, that's how men, צריך להיות בטל הזה, the same way man has to nullify himself, להיות נמשך אחר הנהגתו יתברך. What's our job here? It's to be pulled towards doing the will of Hashem. To nullify our own agenda, to nullify our own ego, and to follow what Hashem wants us to follow. Meaning to make ourselves like Hefker. We are no man's land. There is no owner to us. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We make him the one to lead us and we follow whatever he tells us to do. Okay, so let's go to Sefer Bamidbar and see how does this define what the Sefer is all about. What is Sefer Bamidbar? Sefer Bamidbar is the story of 40 years since Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim till they were on the border of the land of Israel. 40 years. These 40 years followed the giving of the Torah. Originally, if not of the sin of the Meraglim of the spies, Klal Yisrael were supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael quite soon after the receiving of the Torah. They were in Har Sinai for a year, right? And they started walking. And a short time after, right, there was the story of the spies that turned a year into 40 years, right? But even if we look at it as the year without the parasha of the Meraglim, before the story of the spies, the time in the desert is the time where Klal Yisrael had to be nimshach achar hanagato shel Hashem yitbarach. Meaning this is the time given to Klal Yisrael after they received the Torah to internalize Torah, to make Torah who they are. we know that if we are introduced to Torah, if we take somebody, let's say, who didn't have a Torah education, did not have exposure to Jewish life, the first stage is discovering it, right? Seeing what it is and making a commitment to it. But afterwards, the real work starts. The first stage is a very enthusiastic stage. It's like something new is revealed, something great that we didn't see before. But now we have to live everyday life, day by day, according to the laws of Torah. That's quite a mission, quite a job, right? And it takes a lot. And it's a mission of ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. This is the time in the Midbar. It's the time when Klal Yisrael are pulled to follow Hashem, and the journey that they went through till Torah was really part of who they were. This is the 40 years in the desert. So it's a story. It tells us what took place, right? Starting with a very high point. Lechtecha charai b'midbar, b'eretz lo zrua. We left Mitzrayim into a desert, men, women, children, elderly, young, everybody, right? We didn't ask questions, not what will we eat, not how will we survive there. It's a place that one cannot survive, right? No food, no water, no shelter from the elements, no way to survive. They didn't ask questions, they went after Hashem. It was a result of the revelation that they had at the night of Pesach, and all the years of preparation from Avraham Avinu till this point, right? So they're ready to go. So they are going into the desert, they make themselves hefker, right? Basically, to go into a desert with a little bit of matzah is making a decision, right? That I'm totally following somebody who is going to provide for me, who is going to lead me, who is going to protect me. And I don't consider anything else, just the fact that he is the one that I follow. That's the beginning of the story. Then, in the 40 years, there were different aspects of following Hashem that had put into place by Hashem and by Klal Yisrael that helped them to achieve it stage by stage. And I want to bring a few things that we are told about in Chumash Bamidbar that indicate it to us. Okay? So, first thing, the way Klal Yisrael camped in the desert. If you look at the camping in the desert, first Chazal tell us that they requested it. When they saw Hashem coming down with the angels at Matan Torah, they saw them organized in this specific way, and around the Shechina, right? And they said, we wish we would be organized in this particular way. And obviously, we are not speaking about the technicality of three Shvatim in this side, this direction and three in this direction, but the concept of the Mishkan in the center, right? With the Aron HaKodesh, with the Luchot and the Torah inside it. And all of Bnei Israel surrounding it and equally distant from the center, facing the center, and equally distant from the center is the concept of we want to be with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is considered a very, very high point in the history of Klal Yisrael. The camping in the desert indicates that the camp of Klal Yisrael here on earth is like and more than the camps of the angels up in Shamayim. Because in Shamayim, it's not a result of choices that they make. Hashem puts them in this stage. There is no input of theirs in what they are given. Klal Yisrael reached it as a result of what they put, you know, the work they put in from Avraham Avinu till this point, right? And that's why they are even greater than the angels up there. So the very desire to camp in this way, what is the beginning of the Sefer, right, is already being pulled to be led by Hashem. Okay? They are pulled to follow the will of Hashem. And that's why in Shir HaShirim is described as Diglo Alai Ahava. Diglo refers according to commentaries, to the flags that the tribes each one had, and each group of three had, right? And Hashem says, "Diglo alai ahava." It's beloved in my eyes, the way the Jewish people camp in the desert. Hashem told them to camp in this way, but being that they desired it, requested it, wanted it very much, is already an indication that they are continuing in the way of going into the Midbar. We are going to follow you. In Shir HaShirim, it's described the coming out of Mitzrayim, Esh Moshcheini Acharecha Narutza. Pull us towards you, pull us to walk after you, and we'll run. That's what Klal Yisrael tells Hashem. We are here to follow, to run, to do your will. And Hashem trained them in this way in many ways. When they moved from one place to another in the Midbar, it was done in a particular way that the Torah discusses in Chumash Bamidbar. How did they do it? There was the Anan, the cloud, right, that surrounded them, and there was one on top of them, protecting them from the sun. When Hashem wanted them to move, so the cloud was shaped like a beam and went in front as an indication, I want you to go ahead, I want you to move. And when this happened, Klal Yisrael started moving. So how long did they walk? As long as the Anan was in this position. When Hashem wanted them to encamp, so the Anan changed its position and they knew they have to camp. And as the former explains, based on Psukim in the Chumash, there is a lot of duplication describing this way of traveling. The Torah says, Al pi Hashem Yisau ve'al pi Hashem Yachanu. That's the general statement. They traveled based on what Hashem indicated to them. When Hashem wanted them to travel, they traveled. When Hashem wanted them to encamp, to camp, they did. But then the Torah says, and in yom or yomayim, if it's for one day, if it's for this, if it's day, if it's night, many, many details. And the Sforno explains it and says the following, that it was not a simple story to follow the Anan based on the will of Hashem. They are camping in the desert. The desert is not a very pleasant place, right, for camping or for traveling. So let's say they came to a place that was not pleasant in the desert. Let's say there were scorpions and snakes there, so whatever it will be. No, nothing growing, no way for protection, whatever, they didn't like the place. But Hashem said, stay. They stayed. What did it mean to stay? It meant to put the tents together, to unpack, to put the mishkan together, right? Settle in the place. Now, for how long? They didn't have a clue. For how long? Who knows? It could be that tomorrow morning, they spend the whole night settling, and tomorrow morning they'll be told go. And it could be a year or two or three, we don't know. They were put in a place, and they have no say at all. Now, they are not in a pleasant place, so the desire, the natural desire of a human being when he's not in a natural, in a good place is the desire to move. But they cannot make any plans or any decisions. They are dependent totally on Hashem. So let's say finally, Hashem tells them to move. So how long will they be traveling till the next place? Didn't know. It could be an hour, it could be a few days, and it could be more. They don't know. As long as the Anan is in this position, they follow. And let's say they come then to a place that is really an oasis, and they love the place. There is water, there are trees, it's beautiful. They would love to stay. And in the morning, after a whole night of settling, Hashem says, go. And they continue to go. That's a training in following Hashem and nullifying your desire, your want, your will. And the Sforno says so beautifully that they did not feel bad when Hashem told them to camp in a place that was not good. They followed with the same desire when Hashem told them to leave this place as when Hashem told them to leave the place that they wanted to stay at. There was no difference for them if it was a long time or a short time. Hashem said to go, they continued to go with tremendous enthusiasm to do the will of Hashem. And this was life in the desert, to do what Hashem wants, to follow him. That's one aspect of following Hashem and being pulled to do whatever he wants us to do. Another example is the man. On one hand, the man is unbelievable. No worries for sustenance, right? Hashem gives you food. Don't have to worry, you don't have to work for it. You don't even have to cook or look for recipes. It's there, you just want it to be in a particular taste, and it's there for you. But if you think about it, Hashem describes the man, leman anotcha, lenasotcha. It's a inui, an affliction, and it's a test. Why? If you go to sleep and you cannot have anything in the refrigerator, no leftovers, anything that is left is rotten tomorrow morning. So you go to sleep knowing that you have nothing. Now, Hashem provided till today. But obviously, there is some relationship between the fact that Hashem provides and what we do. Can we trust ourselves to be righteous enough that tomorrow Hashem will give us again? Not so simple. And we are in the desert with the whole nation, with children, with elderly. What will be in the morning? We don't know. It's again, you follow the will of Hashem, regardless of what's happening, you know, inside you naturally as a human being. Add to it the fact that the man fell for each person based on how he acted the prior day. If a person was righteous the day before, in the morning he had manna at his door. He didn't have to walk. If he was so-so, he had to walk somewhat. And if it wasn't good the day before, it would be distance, right? And he will have to walk and everybody sees it. It's not only between me and Hashem, but it's the fact that everybody sees it. Obviously, it's not so simple. To be able to live with it and be happy while doing it, right? Not to be bitter, to go ahead with it, to the extent that when Hashem told them to leave the desert and to go to Eretz Yisrael, they didn't want. That's why we had the story of the spies, right? That we'll go into, if we have time, a little bit later, right? So obviously, to be on such a level is really to follow Hashem and make yourself like a desert. And this is the meaning of what Chazal say. What do Chazal say? Chazal say, I'll quote it again, right? וידבר השם אל משה במדבר סיני. השם spoke to Moshe in the desert of Sinai. So say Chazal, כל מי שאינו עושה עצמו כמדבר והפקר, whoever does not make himself like a desert, like no man's land, meaning I don't ask or demand anything, right? אינו יכול לקנות את החוכמה והתורה. Cannot acquire Torah and חוכמה. He doesn't speak about the knowledge of Torah. Right? To intellectually study and get information, everybody can. We have faculties for Talmud in non-Jewish universities. And people there know facts, right? But this is not to acquire Torah. To acquire Torah, to make Torah one with ourselves, we have to prepare who we are as a vessel for it. And that's the book of Bamidbar. What it means is you have to follow Hashem fully and completely. You have to work with your ego and align who you are and what you want with the will of Hashem. And that's the book of Bamidbar. Now, we find in the book of Bamidbar also, as famous and known, that Hashem made a lot of nisim, right? Man, be'er, the Anan, right? They were sustained miraculously. Their clothes grew with them, were washed while and ironed while they were on them, right? And many more things, right? Even though they were walking, their feet did not feel tired, and so on and so on. Many, many miracles. And this was also part of the training. Because being in the desert, there is no way to exist unless via a miracle. How could one be in the desert, a whole nation, right, for 40 years and exist? Obviously, totally, it creates a total dependency of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it indicates, besides of the fact that we depend on him, we can survive without him, and we see it openly, but it creates the inner conviction that there is no existence unless Hashem gives existence. That there is no reality unless Hashem gives reality. You can be in the desert and you can have it all. You can be in the most wonderful place and not succeed, because the one who gives is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's another aspect of follow Hashem. He is the provider. Whatever you have to have, you'll have. And doing his will never affect negatively what you have. If you don't have, it's your test. If you don't have, Hashem wants you to grow via it. But we are fully and completely dependent on Hashem. Because, and I want to read this sentence because that's the bottom line, Bamidbar, Ein metziut lanimtzaim. In a desert, there is no existence to creations, to creatures. Ela zulati ha-metziut ha-amitit. There is only one existence that is possible in Hashem, in the desert. And this is the existence of Hashem. And if he wants us to exist, he will give us whatever we need in order to exist, regardless of the laws of nature. So this is the experience that the Jewish people have in Chumash Bamidbar, and it's essential because it's the first generation after the giving of the Torah. It's not enough to receive it. One has to internalize it. One has to make it who he is. For this takes time, and it is achieved by going through different experiences, different tests, and each and every one of them makes us closer to this realization. So, in the desert, the Torah became actualized. They received it at Har Sinai, but they actualized the life according to Torah in the Midbar, in those 40 years. Now, that's a very beautiful picture. But when we read the book of Bamidbar, we have 10 tests that Klal Yisrael tested Hashem, right? There were stories that ended up in Jewish people being killed, right? If you think about the Mitonenim, the story of Korach, the Meraglim, right? And others, Kivrot HaTa'ava, there are stories in the Sefer that are really stories that ended up in a sad way, where Klal Yisrael did not do the right thing. So the first thing that we have to explain in order to understand the seemingly contradiction between what we described till now and the rest of the Sefer, right? Part one of the Sefer and part two of the Sefer, is the fact that when we speak about chataim, when we speak about sins, about of very great people, it's totally not what we hear when we read it ourselves. And why so? Rav Dessler gives an example when he speaks about the topic. And he says the following. If we hear that somebody is a thief, how will we interpret that he was a thief? Right? Depends on who we are to a big extent. Right? We had a neighbor when I was still, you know, a teenager in Jerusalem. We had a neighbor that was a very, very righteous person, Rebbe Zion, Rebbe Schmechel, that's how was his name. Right? Rebbe Zion Shapira, very, very great person. I did not live in his time, but his wife remained, you know, in the courtyard that we lived, and she was very close to my mother. So she told her many stories about her husband, right? He was, even in Jerusalem of those times, very, very special. So people told him that in the kibbutzim, right, in the secular kibbutzim that were established at the time, started to be established at the time, people have stores open on Shabbos. He said, it cannot be. Who will buy from them? Right? And then they told him that there are no mikvahs there. He said, it cannot be. I saw children. How could it be? Right? So this was his understanding, his level. He couldn't even relate to something lower than this. So we interpret what we hear based on who we are. So when we hear that they complained, or when we hear that they question Moshe, we cannot take it based on who we are and our level. We have to understand that we speak about all of it is about spiritual considerations, right? Is it better spiritually this way or this way? Nothing to do with physicality, all together. Even the famous story of Korach, of who will be the leader, right? Was not based on physical desire for power or for honor. It was all because of spiritual considerations. And it was mistakes that if we would have done it, it would have been mitzvot. On their level, it was considered wrong, just because they were so great. So the lightest deviation in terms of intention is considered already something wrong. So we have to understand the stories are not the way we understand them. So if the Torah tells it to me, what do I learn from it? Right? It's totally not on my level. And if it's so, such a small mistake, why doesn't the Torah tell me exactly what really happened? So I'll have my appreciation towards them. Why does the Torah write it in the way that the Torah writes it? So we have to understand that if the Torah would have written exactly what went through their mind and what was their mistake on their level, we would say, unbelievable, but this book is for angels. I have nothing to do with it. You know, is this a sin? I wish this would be my mitzvah. And this will be my conclusion, and it won't give me anything. Besides knowing that they were great people, right? If the Torah is the safer for all generations, I should be able to relate to it. So what does the Torah take? The Torah takes the root of the matter. The root of the matter. So everybody can relate to it based on where he is. And in this way, we have to look at the stories. So we have first to understand that the 10 tests are the root of the problem. I'll give an example that maybe will make it easier to understand. If we take the story of the spice, right? Hashem said, go to Eretz Yisrael, I'm giving it to you. In fact, he says it in the first tense, I gave it to you, because if Hashem said, it's as if he gave it already, because it's guaranteed, right? And now they have to go to Eretz Yisrael, and they come to Moshe and they say, can we send spice? And it's criticized and punished and so on. What do we feel? They didn't trust Hashem. But this is a generation that left Mitzrayim with nothing to the desert, so how could we say it? Obviously, either this is wrong or this is wrong. It doesn't go with who they are. So we'll explain soon what was their fear. Why didn't they want to go? And when we hear it, we'll see, it's a totally different story. It's not what we think on a superficial level, okay? But the Torah says they didn't want to go. This is what took place. So Hashem said something, he promised, he said something, and they questioned. This is something.
What was it then?
I didn't explain it, right? This is something that I can relate to, because in my life there are things that Hashem wants me to do, or wants me to live with and make peace with, and I question. So it teaches me something. You understand? So that's the first thing. We have to understand that it's a very great generation. And it's not by an accident that this generation is called the Dor De'ah, which is the highest level of internalizing Torah. We have Chochmah, Binah, and Da'at. Da'at is becoming one with the Torah that I'm learning, and they are called Dor De'ah. And they were chosen to put a foundation for all generations. Their tests, the 10 tests that we have here, are 10 tests, we are told, that every person goes through in his lifetime. This kind of test. It's 10 categories of tests, and every Jew in his lifetime goes through these 10 tests. And it's because they created the DNA of dealing with these realities that we have the ability to pass our tests today. Okay? So, I want to take one story, okay? And the story of the spies. Yes. They created the DNA that we possess still today. They are the foundations that our building stands on because they faced this test. And dealt with them, they inherited in to us the power to be able to deal with it. Like Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They did this. Meaning when we understand or they failed and did tshuva. Right? So that's the accomplishment. But definitely there was an immediate reaction of Hashem. Because they were on such a high level, Hashem reacted right away, and they corrected right away. Right? So, we have the power to do tshuva from them as well. Okay? Now, I had a teacher in fifth grade when we learned Bamidbar, and she explained it to us on our level in the following way. He said, for how many years did the Jewish people were in the desert? 40 years? How many times did they fail? 10? How many tests per year did they fail? 1/4, right? One test in 4 years. What a record. And I remember it till today. Obviously, it impressed me very, very much. It changed the whole way you see the story. So even in terms of numbers, let alone in terms of the quality of the test, what made it into a test, and you know how they dealt with it after. The way they dealt with it after is as much of a lesson as how they failed. Because and that's another lesson that is essential before we start with the specific story. Every process of growth is a process of up and down. Ein adam tzadik v'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yichta. That's the nature, b'chira. B'chira means, I can do this, I can do this. Sometimes I go the right direction, sometimes not. The question is not, do I have failures? The question is, what's the general direction? Is it like, and I don't move, or is it like this? Right? Yeah, I fall, but I go higher, and I fall, and I go higher. And this is what it was in this generation. So I want to take one story, the story of the spies, and see what was the test, according to one way of explaining, there is more than one, and see what was the test, what was accomplished via it, and see how is it my test today to how every one of us goes through this type of a test in his lifetime. Okay? So what was the story? Hashem said, I gave you the land. Go and conquer it. Go in. And if they would have gone right away, there would have been no war entering Eretz Israel. And it would have been basically the beginning of the times of Mashiach when they came to Eretz Israel. Right? So a lot was lost via this story. If we combine the stories in Bamidbar and Dvarim together, this story is discussed in both places, and we can't understand it fully if we don't combine the two. That's why the Torah teaches it twice. It gives us different perspectives, right? So, it started with the Jewish people asking for spies. This is what's written in Dvarim, when Moshe rebukes them. This was a fault. And in Bamidbar, Hashem says, send people. But it's Hashem said send because they said we want to send. Okay, so it started the way it's described in Dvarim, and then Hashem said, send people. And then Hashem said, which kind of people? The heads of the tribes, and their names are mentioned in the Torah. And Rashi tells us they are called Anashim, right? Whenever we have the term Anashim for people, it's showing righteousness. They were very righteous people. Think just among them was Yehoshua, was Caleb, right? It was very, very great people. But Moshe is already worried in the very, very beginning, before they left. Why? How do we know it? Because he prays for Yehoshua and adds a yud to his name. So from Hoshea it becomes Yehoshua, what means Ka, yud hei, will save you. Hashem should save you from the plot of the spies. So Moshe wasn't happy with it, but there was no choice but to let them go. Right? And I'll soon explain why. And they go. Moshe instructs them before what he wants them to check. And they come back and they answer the questions that Moshe asks them. The facts were frightening on a physical level. They were giants there, right? Different things that they described, right? That the cities were very fortified. All true. They came back with a true report of what they saw. More than this, we find in Dvarim, when Moshe tells the Jewish people, don't worry from entering the land of Israel, he describes how frightening it is to go, but he says, don't worry. And his description of the land of Israel is much more extreme than the spies. So what was the sin? Right? Why are they rebuked? Why do we cry till today on Tisha B'Av as a result of this, you know, this test that they went through? Right? So Mefarshim say they added one word, but, Ephes, right? Meaning they said an opinion too. What indicates to us that when they wanted to go, they had an agenda. Now, what was the agenda? Why didn't they want to go? Didn't they know that Hashem performs miracles for them? Do we need to assure them that if Hashem says, go, I gave it to you, that they will receive it? Obviously they will, right? Who conquered Paro, Amalek, Sichon, Og, right? Obviously, that's not a question even, right? So what was their worry? They lived for 40 years in the desert. The Mishkan in the middle, they around them. What did they do all day? Learn Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu. Didn't have to worry about anything. Not food, not shelter, not clothing, not anything, not health. They were all healthy. Ideal reality. And they really soared spiritually. It was very, very special. It was Gan Eden on earth, basically. That's what it was. It was like the reality of Odom HaRishon before the Chet, almost, besides the fact that there was death, right? But otherwise, it was Gan Eden. Now, they have to go into Eretz Yisrael. Going into Eretz Yisrael meant living a life the way we live it. You get up in the morning, you go to work. You have a field, you go to work. All day, you are involved with the physical. You have to prepare food. You have to make sure you have a shelter. You have to buy clothes. You have to sew clothes. You have to wash them. You have to iron them. A whole day, in terms of time, around physicality. They were afraid that in such a reality, they will not be able to connect to Hashem in the way they connect it in the Midbar. And for them, the connection to Hashem was life. If they cannot be connected to Hashem, why are they alive? They desired, because of who they were, a true, close relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they were afraid to go out and go into the field, be involved in artziyut, right, in earthly matters, and maintain who they are. They came back, they said, Eretz Ochelet Yoshvea. It's a land that consumes its inhabitants. That it's up, literally translating, its inhabitants. So on a physical level, Rashi explains that Hashem wanted the people of the land of Israel not to pay attention to them, not to find them and discover that they are spies. So he made people die at that time. So they were busy burying people, they didn't pay attention to the spice. So that's the simple shot interpretation of a land that consumes its inhabitants. But commentaries explain, it's the earthiness of the land of Israel that might consume the people who are there. Especially, what did they bring back? They brought a fruit that two people had to carry. They brought grapes that eight people had to carry. Just one, you know, how do you call it?
Cluster,
thank you. One cluster of grapes, eight people carrying it. So they said, see how well this land is doing in physicality. We are afraid. We won't be able to handle the test. Now, were they right in their fear? Yes, they were. The Sfas-Emes explains something that is so profound and so beautiful. He says, yes, there was room to be afraid. And the way they were before they sent the spies, they could not conquer the land of Israel and remain who they are. Meaning, they were not on the spiritual level yet fully to come into the land of Israel and be able to maintain the same closeness to Hashem that they had in the desert. It's a big, big test. There is the test of I worked and I attribute to myself and many others. Right? So it was too difficult for them. So why does Hashem tell them go? Obviously, Hashem doesn't put us into tests that will cause us failures that we cannot overcome. Says this for them is something amazing. He says, if they would have followed Hashem without questions, this act would make them fully capable of dealing with the land of Israel. Because if you trust Hashem to this extent, that even your spiritual concerns are put aside, because, and you follow Hashem because he tells you, this elevates a person to that extent that he can deal with everything. Because he looks at everything as a test coming from Hashem, and being focused on this fully and completely and internalizing it, right, helps a person to pass any test possible. So they were right, interestingly enough. And their concern was spiritual. But they didn't have the courage to say, let's rely on Hashem. He tells us to go, we are going anyhow. Yet. So what did Hashem give them? Hashem gave them a year per day that they were in the land of Israel. Right? A year to stay in the desert. 40 years in the desert, corresponding to the 40 days that they were in Eretz Yisrael. A year per day. That spies were for 40 days in Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem says, for these 40 days that you didn't follow what I wanted you to follow, you will stay in the desert for 40 years. None of you will go into the land of Israel. You'll die in the desert. And your children will go into Eretz Yisrael. Everybody who was between 20 and 60 at that point will die in the Midbar, will not go into Eretz Yisrael, besides the women who were not part of it. And Caleb and Joshua, of course, the two were not involved among the spies. Now, this seems not fair. Why a year per day? Shouldn't it be a day per day? Is Hashem eager to punish? Is Hashem eager to create difficulties? So I heard in the name of the Beis Yisrael a beautiful explanation. He said it was not punishment. It was a reward. It was a rectification of what went wrong and a reward. Because what did they get? They got 40 years of Gan Eden. What was life in the desert? Gan Eden. What they got was a way to prepare better. They got 40 years where they went through more tests. Had to follow Hashem fully and completely, all through, right? And develop the capability while up and down, but always coming up again after falling. They created the strength that is necessary to go into Eretz Yisrael and succeed. And the next generation was the generation that did it. Now, I saw what's the core of the problem here? The core of the problem is not that they didn't believe in Hashem. They knew if Hashem says, I gave the land to you, of course he'll give it to them. In whom didn't they believe? In themselves. In themselves. And it's essential to believe that if Hashem gives us whatever it is, we are capable of spiritually dealing with it. Certain things can make us not be able to survive physically, emotionally. But spiritually, if Hashem puts it in front of us, it means we can grow through the experience. Many times it's extremely difficult. But we can grow through the experience, spiritually. The example that is given for it is a very beautiful example. When the wife of Potiphar approached him, right, and wanted him to sin, it was a terrible test. Yeah. Without going into the details, Chazal described it as a test that is beyond human capacity to overcome. It was the help of Yaakov that he saw in his mind that helped him. Hashem, of course, helped him because he wanted to succeed. But a human being on his own, under these circumstances, would have not been able to overcome it. What did Yosef tell her when she tried to convince him to do whatever she wanted? Yosef said, "Ein babayit hazeh gadol mimeni. I was put in this household as the one in charge, the top. So how could I betray my master?" And this statement is taken by Meforshim as a general statement that we have to tell ourselves. En babayit hazeh, in this world, there is nobody greater than us. We are Klal Yisrael. And Hashem entrusted us with this household, with everything that is here. If we understand it, we are able to find inside ourselves what it takes to overcome. I read a very interesting story about Europe before the war, when Agudas Yisrael was created. And there were great people who stood aside meanwhile, right? Stood aside meanwhile for different reasons. Obviously, they had their arguments, right? History proved that it was a must later on, right? But in the beginning, life is with Yaakov. Not every great person stood at Beis Yaakov right at the beginning. So there was one great person that did not want to join Agudas Yisrael. And when he spoke to the Imre Emes, the Gerer Rebbe, who was very strongly behind, right, the force behind Agudas Yisrael, and he told him, "I'm afraid of spiritual precautions that will be negative and come as a result of it." So he answered him a beautiful answer that I never heard before. He brought a chazal that I never heard before, but it's so, so beautiful. He told them, "We have to follow in the ways of Hashem." Which ways of Hashem? Hashem, he says, "E'emin be'olamo uvra'o." Hashem trusted the world and he created it. Meaning, in other words, the very fact that Hashem created the world is telling us it will succeed, it will get to its purpose. He trusted. Whom did he entrust the world with? He entrusted it with us. So obviously we can do it. Okay, now, every one of us stands at different times in front of situations like this, when we have to get out from the sheltered environment, from the time where we were provided with everything. Everything was done for us spiritually. I'm not even speaking physically, but physically too. And we have to become independent and achieve on our own. And it's very frightening. Think about, you graduate school and you have to go to the workforce, right? You will face tests that you didn't have when you were in school. You won't have the nourishment that you had in school spiritually, right? As a Bes Yaakov student, you are told Torah half a day every day, right? You get married, you have a family, you have other obligations. How much of it can you do, right? It's going from a time where we were nourished, where we were given everything, and then we have now to go on our own, to face reality, and to maintain who we are, find ways, create ways that will enable us to be who we are supposed to be under new circumstances, right? So this test is basically a test that all of us face. If we take our own lives, right, there are stages in our life where it's easier to withstand tests, that we are not faced into situations where we have to take the step of making growth on our own, right? But if Hashem entrusted us with us, we can do it. And if you take it further to the concept of spiritual growth, what is spiritual growth demanding of us? I have spiritually my comfort zone. This is what I do, this is what I don't do, and I feel comfortable. Any process of growth tells me, leave the zone of comfort, go beyond. It's not easy, right? It's new, it's challenging. You have to create new tools for it, but that's the only way to grow. So a person can go up and down all of his life, but remain basically in the same zone. So he might not violate any Avera, right? He might do all the mitzvos, but there is no growth. Growth demands leave your territory. Conquer new territory. Conquering new territory is a battle. Conquering new territory is difficult. It's facing challenges and having to overcome them. But that's what life is all about. So the book of Bamidbar, via these stories, teaches us different ways of thinking that will encourage us to do it. Know who you are. Hashem entrusted this world with you, to you. So you can do it. Go ahead. The Sefer of Bamidbar, we have 2 more minutes, the Sefer of Bamidbar ends with the places the Jewish people faced in the desert. A list of 42 places. The end of Parashat Masseh, that Klal Yisrael went through. Now, what's the point in it? Many of those names we never heard. If we, at a certain point in our life, go through what we went through in order to learn from it, and what we are told is familiar to us, we can learn from it. But just to give us a list of names that didn't tell us anything, what's the point? Names that we never heard. This list is not complete. After the death of Aharon, Klal Yisrael went backward 7 Masaot. So together it's 49. And when we hear already 49, it creates an association. It's 49 gates of impurity vis-a-vis 49 gates of purity. And what Mefoshim explained is that it was not just arbitrary that the Masaot, the journeys in the desert. Hashem told us to go, it means he directed us to a place where we can achieve more. How long was the journey? As long as we had to prepare for it. For how long did we stay there? As long as we needed to accomplish it. We accomplish it, right away send us to another place where we can achieve more. And it's 49 levels of growth that prepared Klal Yisrael to enter Eretz Yisrael, to be on the right level to enter Eretz Yisrael. Now, commentaries also say that this is an outline of Jewish history, because as we said, that's the DNA, and then we follow. I'll give you just one example that commentaries say. The 25th place that they camped was Hashmona. Obviously, it's the place that corresponds to the test of Yavan, of Hanukkah, that they passed. So we have here some stories where they failed, but they had 49 stages. On many of them, we are not told anything because they did it very successfully, right? And where they failed, it's lessons for us and messages for us that via them we can go through our lifetime as individuals and Klal Yisrael as a whole. Okay. We'll finish here.